You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
Whilst I was in those roles, I always had community at the core of them. So whenever I was learning something new, for example, in DevOps, it was because of the things that they gave me that allowed me to become the best DevOps engineer that I could be.
Hey everyone, it's Jason Baum, Director of Membership at DevOps Institute, and this is the Humans of DevOps podcast. Well, I am very excited today to be joined by my guest, international speaker, creator, blogger, and podcast host, Pauline Narvis. And as if that wasn't enough, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what Pauline does. So Pauline is a community engineer at Gitpod, community founder at Ladies of DevOps, ambassador for Code First Girls, author of the DevX Digest. She runs her own blog, Pauline.com, which is Pawlean.com, and the host of the By Pauline podcast. Pauline, welcome to the show.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here today. I mean, I've listened to a few of your episodes before, and I mean, we were just talking before how I love how you've touched on the human side of DevOps. So I'm really, really excited for this conversation.
Thank you. And I have listened to your podcast as well, and you are an amazing host. So I'm excited. Anytime we get to talk to a host from another podcast, it's always interesting because I feel like we're both inclined to interview each other. So
that always happens, yeah.
So let's see where this one goes. And are you ready to get human?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so let's dive in. Let's talk a little bit about, I mean, my gosh, Pauline, when do you sleep? You do so much. So where do we get? I think we should just begin. Tell us a little bit about when you were born. No, so when did you know that engineering was for you? When did you really start getting into it? And let's start there.
Yeah, no. Yeah, so my journey, I think it's one of those things that It's been such a long journey, and it's been such a sort of complicated journey because, as with most journeys, you sort of start to, it involves you trying to figure out who you are, what you want, and just doing a bit of growing up along the way. And so my official start, I would say, when I got into engineering was when I was just 8 years old. My parents had a family computer that I used, and it connected to the internet. And I remember the first day I connected to the internet, I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much stuff that you can do here. You could play games, you could like create things, you can, you know, it was absolutely endless there. And today it's even more endless. There's like all sorts of things that you can do, and we've advanced so much. But back when I was 8 years old, I discovered website building. I wanted to build a website from scratch because I was playing a game at the time, which was MMO, like an online game, and you could sort of just go in and run around and complete quests and stuff, and I really enjoyed it, but there was parts of the game that I just didn't I didn't really like, and I wanted to add extra things. So I was like, as an 8-year-old playing this game, I said, how can I change this? What can I do to add these elements, and how can I build something like this myself? So I went down this rabbit hole of realizing that this game was hosted on a website. So I decided to start there, and then that's when I started learning about the basics of web development. So I looked at HTML, CSS, bit of JavaScript, and then I sort of just fell in love with building random things on like random websites for different topics that I really loved. So at the time, I liked playing video games, I liked different films, so I created websites dedicated to a specific film or dedicated to a specific game. And I just enjoyed the whole process of just building the website from scratch, the different elements, and then adding the content on top. and then hosting it and then sending the link to people to read and check out. And sometimes I'd get comments from people who also like the same thing. And then out of there, I actually found my first like online community. And this was like, it went on for a couple of years. And I did that as a side thing, as a hobby growing up. And yeah, I think that was the very first time I said, wow, this is awesome. This is so much fun. But I didn't actually think that it was a viable like career path, because up until that point, everyone like at school or, you know, my family were telling me that it wasn't a career. It's just a hobby. You can continue with your hobby, but go in into the real world, become a doctor, go into medicine, and, you know, contribute to society that way. And
they were wrong, weren't they? They were way wrong. I know what you mean, by the way, because yes. Like, you know, computers were for fun. That's not, that wasn't a career. So they said, and it's just so funny to, when we talk to our guests on this podcast and, you know, you didn't like the game, so you built your own. I didn't like a game, I went out and bought a new one. Like, I think it's so interesting. But so, I mean, this is like a hobby for you. It's fun. So when did you realize that you could make it a career? If everyone's telling you it's not a career. How did you go from, all right, I'm not going to listen to them and make it a career? Like, I didn't do that. I just had fun. And then I didn't realize that this was a career. Huge mistake for me, but great, great move on your part. So how did you know?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. So for me, it was, so I was at university studying my degree in biomedical sciences. And that was the degree that my parents had asked me to do because I failed my first medicine exam to get into medical school. And so they were like, go to biomed, and it's like the next best thing. I went in and did that. But it was my second year at university doing that degree where I just took a step back and I was like, I hate this. Like, I love learning. I love picking up a book and reading how the human body works in terms of like when it's healthy and when it's diseased. It's really, really interesting stuff. But as a practitioner, you know, working either in hospitals or in labs, it just didn't appeal to me at all. And my course was 3 years. So I got to the middle point and I said, I can't graduate next year and expect to go to the world and contribute when I hate what I do and I don't have any passion for it. So around the same time, out of nowhere, I actually got an email from the university's computer science department talking about how they have a coding course for women only. And it was in partnership with a company called Code First Girls. And I saw the email and I was like, whoa, all this time I've been coding websites by myself in the room, in my own room, just in the corner of my room, all by myself. This whole concept of coding with other people, just I was blown away. And also it was only women as well. That blew me away even more. So I decided to sign up. It was a course teaching the basics of web development. And I had already got the basics down from being self-taught and tinkering around with web development as a hobby. But then I joined the course just to like understand what this was all about. So I did the course and I was, I learned so many cool things. Like that was the first time I learned about Git and GitHub and version control and stuff like that. Because up until that point, like I said, I was just coding by myself. I used to develop PHP websites for WordPress, and I used to like edit them in my text editor and like upload it via FTP onto the server. And that's what I used to do. But then at Code First Girls, I learned that, you know, you could even host websites on GitHub, for example. But yeah, it was that moment where I connected with all these women who also wanted to learn how to code, who had no experience. And we all got like a certificate from it. And then they were looking for ambassadors. They were looking for instructors to help teach the future courses. And it was at that moment I realized that coding is not just a hobby. It's not just a side thing that some people do. It can be a viable career because the instructors that were teaching it had very successful careers in tech, and they were volunteering their time to help build this coding community, to pay it forward to other people. And that was when I said, oh my gosh, this is a viable career. But, you know, I went and told my parents about it, and they were like, okay, it's okay, you can continue doing that hobby, you can go to these clubs if you want to keep, you know, if you want to spend 4 hours a week doing that, continue, but you need to graduate, you need to go into postgraduate medicine, and that is it, that's final. So it was really like upsetting for me at first, but then I just continued with it because I found this new community who all really just connected with me and like reminded me that I was going in the right direction. And it's honestly, I thank a lot of the Code First Girls community at the start for where I am today, because if it wasn't for them encouraging me throughout the whole thing when everyone else was saying like, don't do it, like you're doing biomed, stick in your, you know, stay in your lane, blah, 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 then I don't think I would be here where I am now. So yeah, I think that was when I was like, yeah, this
yeah.
is it.
That's the power of community, right? Thank goodness for communities, because yes. Look, a lot of people in our lives who love us want things for us, but certainly they have their reasons for everything, and it's in, you know, often in their eyes best interest for you, but you're the one who knows your life, right? And even when it's your parents, that's like the hardest thing, right? Sometimes is that disconnect when you're going to be a doctor and you're like, I don't want to be a doctor. Yeah, I want to be a coder. I'm sure I know I've gone through that. I'm sure a lot of people who are listening have gone through that. So, but kudos to you, because you found the community to push you. You know, a lot of times, you know, you don't have that or early enough. And so sometimes you feel stuck. So I think that's great that you found that community. I'm assuming that's the reason why you're so, I read your bio. How many things said community in it? You know, you're a community ambassador, a community founder, and a community engineer. So maybe that's a good segue for us to talk a bit about community and what community means to you, and you've kind of shaped your career with community.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, I don't think I'd be where I am now without the community that I found, and yeah. So so just to give you a bit of context, right now, like you said, I'm a community engineer at Gitpod. And for those who may have not heard of us before, Gitpod is an open source container platform that provisions ready to code developer environments in the cloud. So you can access it in the browser via your laptop or tablet, and also your local IDE. So I got this role at Gitpod July 2021 this year. It feels like years ago now, but that in that role, in my role currently, what I'm doing is I'm building the community that use Gitpod, and it's been such a interesting journey. It's been so positive because I've been able to apply my learnings of community building over, you know, from Code First Girls, from Ladies in DevOps, and from all the various different communities. Like, I was also part of a hackathon community. I was also part of a blogging community. So all of these communities that I've either been a part of or led in some way, I've been able to apply the same sort of learnings to Gitpod. And it's been such a like positive experience. And it's honestly like one of those things where I have to wake up, when I wake up in the morning, I just pinch myself, because I'm like, I'm doing the job that I've always wanted to do, but I couldn't place it in a role, because, you know, when I got into tech, I was an engineer, I was coding 9 to 5 as a DevOps engineer, as an SRE, and also a software engineer, because I did the training scheme. And whilst I was in those roles, I always had community at the core of them. So whenever I was learning something new, for example, in DevOps, I reached out to the wonderful tech community on Twitter, asking for advice on learning how to get started with DevOps. And it was because of the things that they gave me that allowed me to become the best DevOps engineer that I could be. And I think it's the same sort of thing when it comes with, when it comes to like the communities that I found now, or that I help build, I try to pay it forward as much as I can, just because that's what the community's previously has given to me, if that makes sense.
It definitely makes sense. And I think that's what so many people rely on communities for, right? Is support. It's the support, it's the advice, it's the wisdom that others, you know, if you're not the first person who's gone through it. A great, great term is, you know, we're not reinventing the wheel, we're just improving it. So it's like, you know, and that's kind of the purpose of community, other than, hey, there's someone here to talk to, which is a huge piece of it, right? Sometimes you just need to vent, you know, or you know, it's one way, or then there's other times where you just need to take in. So I think that's the great piece of community. How has it helped you as far as like breaking into the industry, but then also were there barriers for you? We've talked to some women on the podcast as far as being women in tech, you know, the challenges that they've had. Did having your own built-in community help you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So Ladies in DevOps is a community I started this April this year. And the reason I actually started it was because I had just started at a new company. So over the past 3 years, so just to keep everyone in the loop, I graduated in 2018. I got my first tech job that summer, and then I worked that job for 2 years, and then end of 2020, I left my old company and joined a new company as a DevOps engineer, and then in July I joined Gitpod. So when I was a DevOps engineer in the second tech company I joined, I had left something that I was very comfortable in. So I graduated in 2018 and I had this company that I worked at for 2 years, and I had the support network because it was part of a graduate training scheme. So they got fresh graduates out of university to train to become whatever they want to become in the company. And for me, I was in the tech space, so I had a few people who were also interested in tech, so we had this nice little graduate tech community within the company. And it was really nice because they really supported me throughout all the learnings of the past 2 years. And then when I left that company to join as a DevOps engineer at another, I suddenly lost my support network. I suddenly lost everything. I just didn't have the same people around me whenever I went for advice. They just couldn't relate with the things that I was learning anymore because we were in two different companies now. And so I created Ladies in DevOps as a safe space for like self-identifying women to connect with each other, because I needed it. I needed that community at that time when I joined a new company and I couldn't see another woman in sight. And I, you know, my team, they were all very lovely, but I felt like we just weren't connecting the same way. And in my other, in the first tech job I had, there was women also in tech who I sort of relied on for that support. So that's why when I left, I just didn't have that anymore. And that's why I created Ladies in DevOps. And the next few months before I joined Gitpod were so much better than the first few months when I didn't have Ladies in DevOps, because I would go in to work, do my like 9-5, do my different tickets, move a ticket from left to right. And then I would go into the Ladies in DevOps community, which is hosted on Discord. And then I'll just have a conversation with someone from the other side of the world who's also a DevOps engineer, who also had a bad day. And we would just be talking about like, you know, supporting each other with various different issues that we were that we had that day, whether that was like a technical thing or a personal thing or whatever it was. And it was that like supported me through that. And genuinely, I don't think I would have survived if I continued to just go into that job and feel so isolated and alone, because no one else looked like me, no one else seemed to want to talk to me. And you know, and then now I had Ladies in DevOps, that changed everything for me.
Are you looking to get DevOps certified? Demonstrate your DevOps knowledge and advance your career with a certification from DevOps Institute. Get certified in DevOps Leader, SRE, or DevSecOps, just to name a few. Learn anywhere, anytime. the choice is yours. Choose to get certified through our vast partner network, self-study programs, or our new SkillUp e-learning videos. The exams are developed in collaboration with industry thought leaders and subject matter experts in the DevOps space. Learn more at devopsinstitute.com/certifications.
Yeah, sometimes it feels like you're screaming into an abyss, you know, when you're not connected. And, you know, for me, the pandemic, well, for a lot of people, the pandemic is a great example of, you know, I said on another podcast that we did that I'm a reluctant, extrovert. You know, like I am an extrovert, but sometimes it drains me, you know, being, you know, having the spotlight on you sometimes or yes, talking, you know, that sometimes that's a draining feeling. But when you're disconnected and you don't have the community, because I do seek community as well. I'm a community builder myself. And I think anyone that is seeks community. And the pandemic is one example of it being taken away, you know, of having a group maybe that you could vent with, or maybe you look to different types of communities. Mm-hmm. So I get that sense of screaming into the void sometimes, you know, until you make that community. What would you say to someone maybe who's starting out? Because you said something really powerful. You don't think you would have made it if you didn't have that community. You know, for someone who's starting out seeking the community, how do you know we've found the right one? How do you know?
Oh, that's such a good question, because it's interesting because the pandemic really brought alive a lot of online communities. And I think at the start of the pandemic, I was actively looking for various different online communities to feel better about the whole situation that was just going on across the world. And so I joined quite a few, and a lot of them actually sprung up on Discord, because Discord feels like the most natural for me anyway, because I've been part of different communities on various different platforms, but Discord has been one of those that feels, for me anyway, feels like the best place to build your community around. So I joined so many Discord servers the first time the pandemic hit, as I was like looking for community and looking for people to connect with. And I quickly found that the ones that like welcomed me, listened to my story, and gave me that sense of feeling that I was safe, and that things that I had shared, that I was going to share, wasn't going to be sent around anywhere, or there was no judgment. That is when I felt like, oh yeah, this is the right place for me. It's all about, it's so weird, because like when we think about creating a safe environment, it's quite easy to think of like when you go into a room, you sort of feel people can create that environment in person. But when you have it online, it's a bit, I don't know, it's so difficult to sort of replicate that. But I think once you know that I think you can easily see on online communities, actually, where if you quickly browse through different channels and see who's talking and see types of people that talk to each other and how they speak to each other, I think you can start to see what sort of like culture and environment that they're trying to cultivate. So unfortunately, I actually had to leave quite a few of those communities and those different servers that I joined, because I didn't feel like safe in them, in some of them, as in like I didn't feel like I could open up. I didn't feel like I could share my knowledge or.
And why is that? Like, why do we feel safe in some and not in others?
I think it just goes back to the environment that they cultivate. I mean, so in Ladies in DevOps, as a good example is when we created Ladies in DevOps, one of the things I was worried about was using the word ladies, because it's a very gender term, and then we might specifically exclude different types of women. And so that's why when I was creating the tagline, I made sure that I put self-identifying women, because I wanted to welcome everyone. So you didn't have to be a woman by birth, if you identify as a woman, you are free to join the DevOps, the ladies in DevOps community. So it was the language. I was very, very aware of the language I was using. And we also have, whenever someone says, guys, for example, in our server, I make sure to message them privately just to say, we tend not to use guys because it's very exclusive. And the language that we use, the language that we, you know, talk to each other with or to announce things, it's it contributes to the to the overall environment of the community. And I noticed that when I started like messaging people just to make sure that they don't say that, they became more aware of using more inclusive language. And then we went from, I don't know, it was like 10 people to now around 600 people across the world join us. And, you know, when someone, I've noticed that some of the long-term members have been a bit more inclusive with the way they speak compared to when they first joined. And it's nice to see. It's nice that we've been able to cultivate that sort of positive environment. And now we've got so many different women from all walks of life who have said to me, like privately or publicly on the community chat, that I feel really safe here. And, you know, I can share literally anything. It doesn't have to be about tech. It can just be about things that I'm dealing with as a non-binary person or as a someone who identifies in this certain group. And it's so positive to see. And it's sort of, I think, to answer your question in a roundabout way, it's all about, I think, the being mindful of your community and what you want your community to stand for when you create it. And so I had to put myself in different people's shoes when I was creating the website, when I was creating the community, because I wanted to make sure that if I was this person, how would I feel? How would I react? Would I want to click join? And even once I've clicked join, if I go through the channels, will I be overwhelmed or will I feel immediately at home from the, you know, more inclusive language that people are using and everyone seems quite friendly? Or will I just leave because, you know, people are sharing things that I don't like or not talking in an inclusive way? So yeah, I hope that answered your question in a roundabout way.
It does. I think it does. I was thinking about diversity and inclusion, how important it is these days, and just, you know, for companies and to listen to something like what you were just talking about, and also how we define communities. Let's take the Humans of DevOps, for example, DevOps Institute. You know, we define it as we are for the humans of DevOps. If you're a human and you're in DevOps, join. You know, so, but when you're creating a community, it's always, we always look at it as like, well, you're being exclusionary to someone. Mm-hmm. And yeah, kind of, but I look at it as at the positive of it, which is, we're actually we're being inclusive for those who follow it. So if this is something that you are interested in, we are for you. It's not that we're being exclusive saying, hey, don't join. It's, well, why would you want to join? And B, you know, this is so you could find your, I'm always in awe of my soon to be 4-year-old girl who can go out there and just find a friend who, you, they're always the same personality type. And they just somehow find each other and they connect like that. and it's like, wow, it was hard for her because it's not easy for her to like muster up the, you know, the energy and the ability to make a new friend. But to find that person seems to be so easy for her. She's just, I don't know what it is about children and just finding your tribe so quick that we then forget when we get older, but it's just fascinating because that's what community is, finding your tribe, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something that I've sort of gotten better at over time. Like, especially last year when I was going through so many different communities and trying to be a part of like so many of them and then deciding that actually, this is what I want. Like, because sometimes you join different communities and you spend some time there and you're like, actually, these aren't the people that align with my personal values or my long-term goals. And I am not getting much out of this and I don't feel very nice being around these people. people. So then you end up, you know, learning along the way. And I think over time, especially from my point of view, I've learned to find the, get sort of like an instinct on the type of people I want to be around, similar to what you said there. And I think, like you said, it's a skill that certain people that we all forget, and it's something that as community builders, I think you improve on and you build upon the more you like join serial like communities across different platforms and stuff.
Yeah, and it's so important. And I think it's so important that in work and our workspaces, we have safe communities that we can turn to. And I think that employers are starting to listen. Yeah. I'm hoping that it's, you know, the more we talk about it, the more real it becomes.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's something I actually predict in the next few years as we go fully into the remote world. I feel like diversity and inclusion will be number one priority, because you can hire anywhere, so you can literally hire anyone. So I mean, we'll see.
Well, I mean, look, with DevOps, okay, so with culture building, right, what type of culture do you want? Do you want a culture that's nurturing and safe, or do you want one that continues to have barriers? Why do we put up these barriers anymore? You know, it's very mm-hmm. old concepts to keep people out, or I mean, you know, there's all these internal biases and things like that, obviously, that exist. But at the end of the day, don't we want to coexist and be able to have healthy yeah. communities and healthy work environment that people want to go to, and so that you're not screaming into the abyss and hating every moment of it? So what are the biggest challenges that you see in the DevOps space in 2021? And then maybe the positive, what are you excited about for the future?
I would say, actually, since we just talked about diversity and inclusion, that's the first thing that's in my head right now. It's something I experienced firsthand, because in my first job, when I was a DevOps engineer as part of the graduate scheme training thing I did, there was actually quite a few women there. That was because we had a lot of different engineers from different places. So we had folks from Belarus, from India, and so it was quite a widely distributed team, so we had quite a few women there. But then when I joined my second company, I was the only DevOps engineer who was a woman, like, that I could see in my team. And the further back I kept looking, I was just like, where are they all? I can't find anyone. And that was it's quite a local company. So they were local to the city I live in right now. So they weren't as international as my old company. But I think, yeah, diversity and inclusion is like the biggest challenge. And I mean, I spoke to my manager at the time about how he was telling me about all the different applications that came through for the role that I ended up getting. And he said everyone was the same on paper. And the reason that he interviewed me and he picked up my my CV was because he found it interesting that I only had X amount of experience, and that I wasn't like everybody else, because everyone else had a similar experience. It was just like a mass produced, like different applications. But then he said out of the, I don't know, 6 months he was hiring, I was one of the only women that applied. And
that's shocking.
To me, that was shocking. Yeah. Absolutely shocking. Because when I started Ladies in DevOps, I started to see women from across the world who were DevOps engineers and SREs who are clearly there. It's not like we're not there. And I don't know, this is again links back to how important community is, because I've seen in the Ladies in DevOps community people encouraging each other to apply, encouraging each other to go for the role, to go for the interview, and to support each other through that whole really intensive process. And so, yeah, diversity inclusion, very, very important. I don't know the answer to it, but in the DevOps space especially, it's where it's missing quite significantly.
It's interesting to hear, because as you were saying, you kind of answered what I was going to ask, is are women just not applying to it? Mm-hmm. Or could it be in the job description? Does it turn you away because maybe the language isn't welcoming or encouraging for women to apply? That's interesting.
It's a lot of different like touch points you could mm-hmm. go, and we can delve into this a bit more, but like it's just so many different touch points that we need to get better at and you know, improve every step of the way. The point has completely escaped me, so I'll move on to your next question around what I'm excited about in the future in the DevOps space. And I think for me, and I might come across as biased because I now work for Gitpod, but like I said, Gitpod is a container platform that creates a ready-to-code developer environments all in the cloud. So that basically means you can start coding in your developer environment from anywhere, from your tablet, laptop, as long as you have a browser. And the whole cloud ephemeral developer environments, that's the thing to me that I'm so excited about seeing progress in the future. So Gitpod has been doing it over the past few years now of trying to make it more mainstream so that, you know, anyone from any device can code, and they have all of their developer environments automated in a similar way as infrastructure as code. So you specify what your what you want your developer environments to look like. So if you need to install dependencies, you can all put that in a Gitpod YAML file. And then once all the configuration is set up, it automatically builds your developer environment every single time, and it's like a fresh environment. So you'd never have to worry about dependencies. You never have to worry about being tied to your local machine. So, you know, when you, I'm sure everyone has experienced this, when you open a new project that you haven't, when you open up a old project that you haven't opened in a while, and then suddenly the last time you used it, it worked flawlessly, and then suddenly it doesn't, and you're just like, I don't understand what happened, and dependency is outdated or whatever. But Gitpod sort of like makes sure that that doesn't happen. So I'm just really excited about that whole space. Like, there's other like competitors, I guess, and other products like GitHub Code Spaces. You know, they're trying to move local environments to the cloud as well. And it's just more of these sorts of things popping up that make me super excited for the future of like the developer experience of development environments, you know, and how are engineers going to be developing in the future? Will it all be cloud-based? Will we even need very powerful, you know, MacBook Pros, or can we just develop on an iPad? It's all of these things that I'm just really excited to see, grow in the future. It's such a great opportunity. And I think, again, it links back to the diversity and inclusion piece, but also different communities as well, because now with this sort of technology and this sort of software that we're trying to push forward, we're going to then open up coding and tech in general to anyone who doesn't have a powerful machine. And that specifically really excites me. So people who don't have very powerful machines and they think they can't code because they don't have the best spec'd out laptop, it doesn't even matter anymore. You can still learn to code. You can still start your journey wherever you are. So I think that whole space, you know, cloud, ephemeral developer environments, I'm so excited about it.
Amazing. I mean, I could tell how excited you're getting, it's exciting me. And it's like making me reflect, and it's like, my God, did you, for that 8-year-old who went out to, who was like, wanted to create that game, to bring it home, did you ever think in a million years that you would be able to code on a phone potentially the size of your hand from anywhere in the world? I mean, just think about that. To when you were 8 and what you were using.
Absolutely not. I was using this massive, like, chunky computer that my parents had. I couldn't bring it anywhere. That's like, whenever we went out, I would be like rushing home just so I can get on the internet to build something. But now I can literally open up, I could bring my iPad mini that is connected to 5G and connect to a Gitpod workspace and start coding. That blows my mind. blows my mind. It's amazing.
My first family computer was the Mac 2, the Macintosh 2.
Really?
And yeah, And that's like a computer that really didn't do anything unless you had like a floppy disk the size of like my current laptop. So it's like, that's just, you know, reflecting on these things is pretty amazing. And it gets you excited for the future, which is really great. So that kind of brought us home. And now we always ask this final question. You said you listened to the podcast, so maybe you're expecting it. But what is one unique thing about you that nobody knows? Maybe you've never shared in a public space before.
Oh gosh, I feel like I live my life out loud. So I don't know. I feel like I've said this before. I think
if you said it before, it's okay. We won't tell anyone.
So something I've not said that's unique to me. I would say, I don't know. Like, this is sort of the thing I always bring up. It's not that interesting, but I'm actually a twin. And whenever I mention that, people tend to assume that there's two of me just walking around the world, and that is why I can do so much more. But I just want to dispel the rumors completely and say we are non-identical, so you wouldn't be able to tell that we're sisters. But yeah, I like to say that's unique and interesting, I guess.
I was just gonna ask, are we talking to the right Pauline right now? It's like Face Off. No, that's pretty cool. Was it cool growing up with a twin?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're very different as we grow up. Like, I'm more extroverted, she's very introverted. But yeah, it was interesting. We had a lot of fights hogging. I used to hog the computer a lot, and she would be like, "When's my turn?" And I'd be like, "I'm building this awesome website, you know, that's not being seen by anyone, but I built it, so go away." But it was very fun.
That's pretty cool. So I can't thank you enough, Pauline, for being on the podcast. I hope you come back. We have so much more to talk about. I know there's a ton of things that we did not touch on that I've heard you speak about on your podcast. I would love to get into. So will you come back and be a guest another
Absolutely.
Time?
Absolutely. Anytime.
All right. I'm going to take you up on that. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Pauline. And you could check out Pauline at from the DevX Digest newsletter. Her blog, pauline.com, which is pawlean.com, and also the By Pauline podcast. So Pauline, thanks again.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm going to end this episode the same as I always do, encouraging you to become a premium member of DevOps Institute to get access to even more great resources just like this one. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and most of all, stay human. Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.